This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And once again, we're here. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. With me today is Layla Mudin. Layla's our nutritionist in residence, and she joins me this week, as she does each week here, to, we sort of do a duet, answering your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. Radio program at AOL.com. And how are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you? It's getting cold.
It's getting cold, but it's also, I want to commemorate an auspicious occasion because this is our first podcast from our new office.
Yeah, our new digs.
Our new digs.
Here on Madison Avenue.
So our practice has moved to Madison Avenue between 59th and 60th Street. Mm-hmm. And that's a really lovely neighborhood. I mean, we're right at the corner where Central Park starts.
Yes.
Opposite the Sherry Netherland Hotel.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of landmarks around here. Within view, towering over us is what's used to be referred to as the General Motors building. I'm not even sure it's the GM building. We have the Apple headquarters, the lead store in New York City, right within, you know, a block of us. Mm-hmm. And most dangerously, we have a lot of very high-end retail around us. We have Barney's right here.
Yeah.
And ka-ching, you know, it's
Bloomingdale's.
You know, I have to like wear blinders going down the street on the way to work now.
Right.
So, well,
keep the credit cards at home.
Exactly. So, but we're pleased to be here. Yeah. And a very calm and relaxed setting in which to practice this medicine. Mm-hmm. So we're happy to be here. In the news this week, something mm-hmm. that we've been talking about for a long time, which is the EBT heart scan, for coronary calcification, now recommended as part of the screening at the most recent meeting of the American College of Cardiology. They came out with a position paper. Now, they're all for statins and they're all for lowering cholesterol, but they actually say, as we've been saying, mm-hmm. vindicated,
yes.
that people who have zero, unless they have some other coexisting condition, you know, because they're always looking for a reason to put you on a statin.
Right.
But if you have zero, you could reasonably, even with high cholesterol, not go on a statin.
Yeah.
And how many people do we have? And I just looked at the results of a patient, who we have, who had a zero score. She has a cholesterol 383 as the most recent test. I think you might have seen that test result.
Yeah.
And, we're going to send her for a repeat scan just to make sure that in the 5 years since she had a scan, she's not developing plaque. But it's interesting that some people who have sky-high cholesterol, usually when they have a high HDL, they're protected. So that's in the news. Also, some new statistics from the National Institutes of Health, the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health, I guess, mm-hmm. the NCCIH. Mm-hmm. It's a branch of the National Institute of Health, very tiny, small budget, but at least they are looking at integrative health. Use of yoga and meditation mm-hmm. has skyrocketed in the U.S., and I'm looking at the statistics. In 2012, 9.5% of Americans were doing yoga. Now 14.3% were doing yoga. I guess it must be that I started doing yoga. It sent the percentage
That's
up.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's
when
it.
I started.
They followed your lead.
Right. Exactly. In 2017, I started last year. And and thousands of people followed my lead.
There you go.
So it went from 9.5 to 14.3 in just 5 years. Uh-huh. And meditation, this is really interesting, meditation. Mm. And I wonder, these statistics, they're almost a little bit too good to be true. They said that 4% of people were meditating in 2012. Now it's 14.2%.
Wow.
Is that all like those Silicon Valley, you know, brain hacking people who are doing
it? Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Of course, there's always a margin of error, but I think more people are interested.
Yeah.
Especially in today's high-stress climate.
Yeah.
And all of that, to be doing more yoga and meditation, to step back and zoom out a little bit and take some deep breaths.
And the health benefits are so manifest of both of those practices. And you do yoga as well, right?
Yeah. It's good for your body. It's good for your brain. It's good for your outlook.
Yeah. Did you do your yoga this morning?
This morning, no.
You had to come early, so
yeah. Yeah, I had to come early, so I didn't.
Okay. You'll make up for it, though.
I do. Okay. I do. Uh-huh.
All right. Let's get to questions. Remember, radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions.
We actually have an email from Irwin in Israel.
Okay.
He is actually responding to your article from Intelligent Medicine, mm-hmm. the weekly newsletter, Are Organic Foods Worth the Added Expense?
And I must say, you know, he sounds, I read that before, mm-hmm. he must be some guy involved in agribusiness in Israel. And, you know, that already credibilizes him, because I think the Israelis have really done a marvelous job with the meager resources that they had, their meager water resources, you know, poor land, you know, small amounts of land.
Yeah.
They've really affected a transformation in that part of the world.
Yeah. He's anti-glyphosate, which is anti-Roundup, so is very good.
And by the way, just did a podcast, and some of you may hear it. It's called Whitewash, and it's about glyphosate and the whole cover-up of its harmful effects and the harmful effects of GMO. So you should check it out. It's one of our weekday podcasts. We did an interview.
Yeah, I hear that the manufacturer actually had ghostwriters presenting the science, the so-called pseudoscience, so to speak. So Irwin says, all foods are genetically modified, including organic foods. They become hybrids as a result of pollination and mutation. GMO seeds are bred for disease and insect resistance. Organic foods are not.
So just stop for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think what he's trying to do is he's trying to create a justification for GMO.
Mm.
And that's sort of a little bit of deception there, because while it's true that, you know, we've been domesticating foods forever, you know, since virtually the dawn of agriculture, we've been breeding foods. But that's a process that's a little more, shall we say, organic, in that, you know, the combination is going to work or it's not going to work. Yeah. It's subject to natural selection. What we can now do is we can do really weird things. We can make, a watermelon flavored apple, or we can, you know, we just really weird stuff.
Right.
And then raise them under conditions that are artificial, with a lot of pesticides and glyphosate and things like that. And it's synthetic.
Yeah.
And some people say, what's wrong with modern science and chemistry? But what we're creating is foods that really didn't evolve in nature, and our systems may not be adapted to them.
Right. He says that the glyphosate problem with GMO seeds can be eliminated if farmers use natural weed control
procedures. I'm all for that. Yeah.
He asserts that organic farmers do not tell you how much the crop had to be destroyed because they didn't have the appropriate insect predators or disease resistance, because the seeds mutated and changed characteristics.
Okay.
Anyhow.
All right. So we're airing that, you know, that we could go on and
proper
on.
Farming methods are key.
Yeah.
All of that kind of thing. So, and
it's another
reason that the soil is depleted as well, because of improper, and there needs to be rotation. Mm-hmm. Where you grew corn, you now have to grow another crop in its place, and then the following season do something else.
Yeah. There's a whole order of things. And actually, some of the people who really had it down were the Native Americans. They actually really understood the cycles of nature and crop rotation. And then, you know, along came, you know, the Europeans, and they basically sucked all the vitality out of the land.
Yeah.
And then we had the Dust Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
And all the topsoil blew away.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, rapacious agricultural practices.
Mm-hmm. We have an email from Eric says, I wish you would speak more about intermittent fasting and its benefits. I've reached the conclusion.
We did a whole podcast with Walter Longo, who is the
He's the guy.
He's the IF guy.
Right.
And he has actually, he's at the Keck Institute, which is at University of Southern California, and he's actually gets major grants to study the effects of fasting, intermittent fasting, and him and the FMD, the fasting mimicking diet.
Yeah.
And I recently heard a presentation by one of his colleagues at the American College of Nutrition, and there's some, you know, really dramatic evidence that that helps in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So Eric has reached the conclusion that fasting is a requirement for top health for all adults over the age of 20.
It's very paleo too, because we weren't built to, you know, have a continuous larder of food in the refrigerator.
Exactly. They weren't doing breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They ate when they got hungry.
Or when food was available. And famines were deprivation was part of the way that our genetic code evolved.
Right. Eric also believes that it's a healthy response to the problem of the decline of growth hormone throughout our lives.
Well, that's controversial because actually one of the main points that Walter Longo makes is that, you know, a related hormone, which is insulin-like growth factor 1, IGF-1, is a primary driver of cancer.
Yeah.
And that if we overeat and we eat continuously, and especially too much protein, we increase our IGF-1.
Yeah.
So he did a study, and paradoxically, what he found is that people up to the age of about 60 get too much protein, and their IGF-1 is too high. And then after 60, they don't need enough protein, and they need more.
Yeah, they need more because they become sarcopenic.
They become
all that.
Frail.
Yes,
yeah,
they become frail. So,
intermittent fasting is, and I think it would tend to decrease growth hormone.
Well, it would decrease IGF. But when we talk about human growth hormone, after exercise is wonderful for increasing human growth hormone, right? However, if you go have a high carb breakfast or lunch after your workout, anything laden with sugar, it's going to suppress that human growth hormone.
Yeah, for repair
so
and so on.
For repair and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the good stuff.
Right. I'm not a big fan of human growth hormone replacement, you know, the people who do these longevity shots. I'll tell you why, because and this is
that could be dangerous,
documented,
too.
Is that there are animals and humans who are born without growth hormone or growth hormone deficient.
Okay.
And what they are dwarfs. They're not midgets. They're dwarfs. Mm-hmm. Midgets being, you know, deformed body proportions. They're just like dwarfs, like tiny people. And same thing with mice. You know, they're one-third the size of normal mice. They live 40% longer. Because
of the lack of growth hormone.
The lack of growth, because growth hormone, what that growth hormone does is it tends to put you through your cellular cycles. And there's something called Hayflick's Law. It's an old thing, dates back to the, I don't know when, 1950s or 1960s. A guy named Hayflick came up with the idea that every cell only has a certain number of replications. You know, unlike bacteria, which will, you know, replicate for, you know, millennia.
Yeah.
And human cells, you know, they can regenerate, and then they're out of mojo. So if you promote their growth and regeneration, and it happens too fast, game over.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the pinball machine. Game over. You know, you can't go beyond a certain number of.
That's
a little reductive, and it's been challenged, but it's a sort of basic principle of cellular biology now.
Yeah. Feature of cancer cells is they replicate, they transform.
Right.
They're
immortalized.
Immortal.
That's not good.
No, not good.
You know,
we need programmed cell death.
Yes, we need
apoptosis.
Yeah, and we need the ability to have senescence, because otherwise, forget it.
Senescence, yes. Okay. Thank you, Eric, for that thoughtful comment. Oh, so coming back to intermittent fasting, hold on. I think it's a requirement for everybody to fast for 12 hours every night. I'm almost quoting Jeffrey Bland on this.
That's
Dr. Jeffrey Bland.
TRF, time-restricted feeding.
Time-restricted feeding.
Right.
So overnight, you know, if you had dinner at 6, you should not have breakfast until after 6 a.m. tomorrow morning or something like that. And the repair and regeneration process, The restorative process is said by scientists to peak at around the 12th hour of fasting.
Right.
So that's why 12 hours is it. Then you can go.
I love my weekends or my days off because what I do is I'll have dinner, you know, 7, maybe 8, you know, and then I'll sleep and then I'll get up early and I'll work out. I might work out till like noon.
Yeah.
And then, you know, have a nice big breakfast. But hey, that's like 14 or 16 hours.
That's great.
And
that's great.
That works for me. And
I like to do it the other way. Oh. I like to have either a very early dinner or a late lunch. We're talking 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
Not later. And then the following morning, I'm not having breakfast till 8 or 9.
That requires a lot of discipline. Something. You're more disciplined.
Oh,
than I am.
I love sleeping on an empty stomach.
You do. You know, I got to say.
I would follow a traditional Chinese medicine in that regard. They want us all to have an empty stomach for 5 or 6 hours before you go to bed.
Yeah,
I sleep like a baby.
I don't know. Maybe it's my training or an emotional thing, but it's like, okay, leave the table. No dinner for you. Go to bed. No.
Yeah.
There's some solace in having food later. And unfortunately, the night is like less disciplined and it's the witching hour. So you're going to eat more. And you're going to, you know, sit, watch TV, you know, and then you're going to eat more. And I'm succumbed a little bit to that. So the mornings make up for that for me.
Right. Now, that's not something I do on a daily basis. I'll do that maybe a couple of times a week.
Well,
would be the weekend.
That's why you're the nutritionist on the team, because you embody this principle. I can't do that.
I just find it better that way, because I find when I wake up in the morning, I want to eat. I'm hungry for breakfast. So go eat breakfast. So
and it's working for you? How old are you? You're like 92? Are you? It's amazing. You don't look a day over 45.
I'm 54. Thank you. Okay. I don't look a day over 45. That's good. Oh, gosh. All right. So, Eric, thank you for bringing up the intermittent fasting. All right. We have an email from Carolyn. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. I recently read that people with APOE4/4, that gene, would benefit from uptake of DHA.
Yes. I just, just heard an amazing lecture on what to do for those folks.
Carolyn has this APOE4/4 gene, so she's interested in anything.
She has a single hit or a double hit?
Double. 4/4.
Whoa. That is...
Yeah.
But that's about anywhere from 10 to 20 times the risk of Alzheimer's disease.
Really? Okay. So she's interested
Anything. Not inevitable.
Yeah. That would prevent...
It can be modified.
Alzheimer's, dementia, any of that. And she's interested in DHA.
DHA as opposed to DHA. Yeah. DHA has definitely some preventive benefits there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what I'm going to say is, I just recently heard a lecture on, you know, what do you do? And there is some concern because a lot of people these days are, you know, saturated fat has been vindicated. No problem. Have as much as you want. Maybe not for APOE4s. Maybe not for APOE4s.
The other thing that Carolyn brings up, she's
and they might do well on a vegetarian quasi-vegan diet.
Right, right. DHA, she's read something about having the benefit being as a structured phospholipid. We all have phospholipid membranes, especially in all the cells of our body, and that's where DHA takes up residence. You don't necessarily have to take the DHA supplement as a structured phospholipid. It's already a lipid. It's going to become a phospholipid when it becomes part of the phospholipid membrane of brain cells. I just wanted to clarify that for her.
Yeah.
That you don't have to look for some particular structure of it.
So,
of course, you want a very good brand of DHA.
I would have her look at the Bredesen protocol. Dr. Bredesen has worked with patients who are APOE4 and has demonstrated a reduction in their risk and even some improvements in cognitive performance through a multifaceted lifestyle approach, which includes exercise, stress reduction, but also targeted supplements and diet, of course.
Right, right. But they're still receiving beneficial fats, such as in the form of DHA.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's also very, very important. Carolyn, because you want to monitor your carbohydrates as well. You don't want to go too far or too much protein in that regard. So I think a wonderful book is still Dr. David Perlmutter's Grain Brain book.
Mm-hmm.
He also has the APOE4 gene, and his father, he's talked about this in his medical conferences, that's why I'm discussing it here on podcast. His father had Alzheimer's.
Yeah, so really, you know, you're kind of caught
strong in family history.
You're trapped between two paradigms. One is that too much saturated fat can drive the disease, but on the other hand, too much in the way of carbs and a high hemoglobin A1C, glycemic hemoglobin A1C above 5.6 or 5.7 increases your risk. So you want to keep that down with a low carb diet. It's
okay, Carolyn. Thank you for that question. Let's see. We've got from Sarah. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Enjoy the podcast and radio program. My question is regarding vitamin K supplementation. I'm currently taking a vitamin K supplement that has K2, K1, all of that. Because I've read so much on the benefits of vitamin K on the heart and bone health. But after a recent encounter at a medical office where the nurse questioned why I was taking vitamin K, I'm second-guessing taking it.
Rookie mistake.
Oh, no.
Rookie mistake. Tell me.
She said that vitamin K causes your blood to clot.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I'm aware that vitamin K functions like that, but should I stop taking it?
What am I supposed to say? I'm supposed to say that people with no nutrition knowledge should be prohibited from dispensing nutrition advice because they just give the wrong advice.
Just like people without medical knowledge should not be dispensing medical advice.
Or just like parents without parenting ability should not be allowed to have kids.
That's true.
But, it's a rookie mistake. And,
it is.
And, I would blame nurses for their lack of, extensive medical training. But doctors do it all the time.
That's true.
They don't get it. They think vitamin K makes your blood clot. And it does.
Yeah.
It's responsible for blood clotting, but taking more isn't going to make your blood clot more.
Yeah.
A deficiency will cause you to bleed out.
Yeah.
But adequacy and even surfeit will not cause your blood to clot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It will clot normally.
Right. Right. And vitamin K is a matrix. It's the K2 and that's good for keeping calcium out of the arteries.
Does this person know why they're taking vitamin K?
They're taking vitamin K, but they're asking us, oh no, should I stop because of what the nurse told me? Yeah.
Well, they're a nurse. I mean, they should know. I mean, they know better than, a doctor on the radio, right?
Well, nurses in hospitals are responsible for keeping people alive. God bless them. So, yeah. The other pet peeve I have that, and I've heard this from patients directly telling me that the nurse in their office told them, you're on Coumadin now. Stop eating vegetables. That too. Oh, no.
Well, what should they do?
They should do is be aware of the vegetables that have more vitamin K than other vegetables, such as broccoli, kale, spinach, those kind of leafies. And you want to limit your intake of them to not more than 3 servings a day. That does not mean don't eat your vegetables. You limit those particular vegetables to not more than 3 a day. And the most important thing when you're taking a blood thinner like Coumadin is you need a consistent supply of vitamin K, dietary vitamin K, from your vegetables per day. So that's more important than anything.
Okay.
That's more important than anything. Take your vitamin K, Sarah.
Okay, we need to pause because we divide our podcast into 2 parts.
Oh my goodness.
And so what can we anticipate in part 2?
Oh, is there a danger that Lipitor may increase calcification in my heart?
Okay, we'll tackle that question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mutin. And this is our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We'll be right back.